It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Football, fighting, and full-on nonsense. The Stephen Housen Podcast. Made in Manchester.
Hello and welcome to the Stephen Housen Podcast. It's been a couple of weeks since I've managed to get one up. I've had technical difficulties with Jimmy Conrad and with Adam McCullough as well. So I am delighted to tell you that I am joined by someone that is a massive inspiration to me, someone who's an absolute expert in his field, and someone who you might have had a sneak peek of yesterday if you managed to catch yesterday's vlog. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Keith Webber. How are you doing, mate?
Really good, Stephen. Thank you. Thank you.
A little bit of a background for everybody who's listening. Keith is a kettlebell expert. I think that's fair to say. Wouldn't you agree?
I've been doing it for a long time, so I guess if that makes me an expert. Experience makes you an expert. I guess I would be an expert.
Awesome. I managed to get hold of Keith in the most bizarrest of circumstances. I was looking through... Keith's kettlebell workout is kind of well known because Joe Rogan's mentioned it a lot. I think you've actually been on Joe's podcast as well, haven't you?
I was, yeah.
So Keith's kettlebell routine is kind of well known. Joe pushes it pretty hard, and I was on YouTube looking for a kettlebell routine to do. I was doing Keith's, which Keith hadn't uploaded. Someone's ripped it and uploaded it, and in the comments Keith had replied to it, and Keith wasn't even being a dick in the comments. He just replied to someone in the comments, and I was like, oh shit, this looks like the real Keith Webber. Clicked on it, gone on his account. You've obviously just made a YouTube channel now, which I think is a great idea, to put your own kettlebell stuff on there. How's that going for you?
It's so brand new. So far, so good. I get a few more subscribers every day. And apparently, I'm kind of new at this. So apparently, if I get 100 subscribers, I can customize the labeling on my site.
Yeah, I think you can then turn it to like Keith Webber kettlebells rather than like UCX0111, whatever. So yeah, if you're listening, go search for Keith Webber kettlebells. In fact, do you know what? I'll put it in the show notes on the podcast and I'll also tweet a link out as well. So go help Keith get up there, because at the moment, everybody else is using his kettlebell videos. Keith's the guy that you need to go and subscribe to, as I'm sure you've got some stuff planned to be coming out, some more stuff just directly for the YouTube channel. Is that right?
Yeah, I came out with a YouTube channel because for years I just assumed that the instructional videos on the internet were fantastic, and so people could get my videos, and then if they were like, oh, how do you do that exercise, they could just look it up on YouTube and find it. So I started looking around, and I realized that there is some good instruction out there, but a lot of it's not great. And so I thought, well, people know me through my videos. If I make some instructional videos, then at least, I'm not saying my way is the best way, but it certainly is. I'm a physiotherapist, so I don't want to hurt anybody. So I think my way is safe and effective. So, and I've been teaching it for so long, I think I have a couple little tips and tricks to make it a little bit easier to learn. So,
but I've never done an instructional workout video ever. I was a professional rugby player for 5 years. We obviously have a lot of guided instruction through the clubs and things like that, and I was in the army for 7 years, and obviously that's a lot of instructor-led PT. My girlfriend was always big into like the Ministry of Sound dance fitness DVDs and stuff like that, but I've never watched instructional DVDs until I found yours, and I find it easy to follow. I like the pace, the instruction's good, the challenges are good, and let's face it, kettlebells might be the manliest exercise that you possibly can do, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very... Yeah, they are manly, and it was funny. I went for a run this morning so I could clear my mind and have some good things to say on this video. And I was thinking about the beginning of the podcast with Joe, and I didn't know what to expect going into there. But I think he mentioned something like that, how manly kettlebell training is, and I wanted to say something like, most of the people that do my class are women. Huh. And I wanted to continue by saying that, you know, like we think of kettlebells as such a manly exercise, but women, by and large, at least in our society, and I'm sure it's the same with you guys in England, they're the ones that are more likely to push themselves. It seems like there's a lot more societal pressure for them to look a certain way. And it seems like once guys get to a certain point, unless they need it for psychological reasons or whatever, they kind of just throw in the towel and say, well, I'm a middle-aged guy and I'm done. You know, like I'm going to go golfing and maybe play the odd game of soccer or hockey or whatever, but I'm not going to actually work out. I mean, there's only a very few people that seem to want to push themselves to that limit that are guys. But middle-aged women, my God, these women are just, they're, as far as like the classes that I teach in Red Deer, I'm not sure, as far as buying my videos, I think probably by and large is, you know, maybe younger guys that want to be in good shape. But from where I live, it's mostly middle-aged women. And Joe made a crack, and this is when I realized that, okay, this podcast is going to go off the rails in a hurry, because he's just going to take the piss out of me for 2 hours. And he said something like, well, that's because you've got the blonde hair going and they want to get with you. Like, oh, look at, and I thought, he is so funny. Like, he's so good at just bugging the shit out of you. And he bugged the hell out of me for about 2 hours. But I think I got the message across. But yeah, that was quite the experience. But I was sort of in a state of shock for the first few minutes, because I thought I had never been on a podcast before. So, yes, going back to what we were talking about, it's very manly training and it's very hard. And the thing about it, though, is you don't need a heavy weight to make it hard. And so I think there's a huge safety factor involved with it compared to a lot of different types of exercise that you could choose. So, before I started doing kettlebells, I tried to do manly workouts. Like I remember trying to do, when I was 30, doing these Tabata sprints where you sprint 100 meters and then you take a 10-second rest and sprint. Yeah. You do that 10 or 8 times, right? I couldn't do it. I literally couldn't do it. And now I'm middle-aged, let's say that. And I can do that kind of stuff after doing kettlebells all these years. And, you know, the weight I use in the first two videos is a 20 kilogram, which relative to my body weight isn't that much, really. But, oh, my God, it kicks your ass. And so I think that's where the safety factor comes in. You're not using that huge of a weight, but you're getting, with all the momentum, with the exercises and the stabilization and, you know, having this thing on one side of your body trying to pull you off to the side. It's a fantastic way to really elevate your heart rate without any impact.
20 is what I use as well, and it does absolutely kick my ass. Like, if I do your video, I probably have to pause it twice a couple of times for 10, 15 seconds or something, just to catch my breath back usually. Especially, I'm doing day one at the moment, so there's the one where you pass it through your legs doing lunges. That one absolutely ruins me, and I have to pause it after that. And I have to pause usually doing the windmills as well, because I think I can't do them. 20 kg for the windmills, I think, might be too much for me. So I might get a smaller one, like a 12 or something, for doing the windmills, because I just can't do them. It feels like I'm going to drop it on my head when I do them.
Well, hopefully the stuff I put on YouTube will help with that, because I give a few tips and tricks on the windmill, because there's a few common mistakes that guys make, and it's a real hip angle issue. It's not a strength issue. It's more, there's a real subtle change between, you know, bending off to the side or bending more forwards, almost like you're doing like a Romanian deadlift or something like that. And it could be a few degrees of twist that makes all the difference in the world. And I hope I explained that well enough. You'll have to let me know on the YouTube video. Cause
yeah, I go quite far forward on it, and I know that I should be going further to the side. It just feels like that's the way I'm going, and there's not a lot I can do about it.
Well, there's some, I think you'll like the video. I think a lot of people should be going more forward and tensing their lat, sticking their hip out. If you set that exercise up properly, you should be halfway there by the time you start your descent. So I'm sure it's not a strength issue with you. If you're using a 20 kilogram for the video, it's more of a technique thing that probably one little correction will just have you
Kettlebells is the only thing I'm currently doing for cardio. I can't run. I've got compartment syndrome and I've got bad knees from years of army and rugby stuff. So my my calves fill up with blood and they become almost like wooden. They're so solid. So I can't do any form of running at all. And I've tried to play a couple of games of rugby at amateur level. I last about 5 or 6 minutes and then I just can't run anymore. So literally I do a bit of rowing and I do a bit of... I do a bit of kettlebells for cardio, and that's the only cardio I can do. And I've put on a right load of weight since, because I like beer and I like pizzas, and I do overeat. but the weight training that I've done since doing that is mostly Olympic stuff. I do quite a lot of powerlifting. I do quite a lot of compound stuff. So, I mean, I start pretty much every day with deadlifts. So I do think I'm fairly strong. So 20 kgs, it isn't too much for me in terms of the general movements, but it's just that... just the windmills, it just kills me for some reason. It's just, I'm also not that flexible, which I think is probably partly down to it.
Well, you know what, if it's any consolation, Joe told me that he uses a 16 kilo for the first two videos, which surprised me because he is thick. Like, he is a strong guy, you can tell.
Yeah, there's some video of him recently using the Gorilla kettlebell, which I think is about 26 or 28 kg, I think, isn't it?
I just saw one the other day. It might be a 32.
Ooh, that's a big boy.
It's the big gorilla one. The one I saw, it was 32 kilos. And, yeah, that's wow.
See, that shouldn't be. And I know you've mentioned it a few times. Joe's mentioned it a few times when talking about don't let your ego get in the way when you're talking about kettlebells, because a small kettlebell will ruin you. I do about 130 kilogram for a bench press for 10. I'm trying to get up to about 150 for 10. I do about 240 for deadlifts and a 20 kilogram kettlebell. Like, I was doing good mornings yesterday, my back's sore today just from doing good mornings with a 20 kg, and you're like, this shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
That's what I love about kettlebells is that, I mean, I don't take it anywhere with me. It literally just stays by the back door and I go and do them in the garden. That's what I love about the flexibility of kettlebells. I don't think there's enough people that really working out of them. And that's why I like the instructionals for them as well, because I think it's just one of those things that they're in every gym, or they're getting to be in every gym. People just don't know what the fuck they're doing with them.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, like, and I think there's so much stuff out there, and there's so much stuff with people's lives, and they're told to eat this and not eat that and do this stretch and do yoga and do all this. And when it comes to kettlebells, yeah, they don't have any idea. And there's not a lot of great videos out there that you can just plug in, like the, I don't know, P90X or whatever, and just follow along and say, okay, well, if this guy can do it, I can do it. And I think people need that, because, and that's why a lot, especially women love doing group classes, because they can just turn their brains off and forget about everything and have someone else tell them what to do. Same with CrossFit. That's a good example. People have the programming done for them.
Yeah.
And, so it is. It's true. I love going to commercial gyms every once in a while, and I see these kettlebells sitting there, and occasionally I'll see someone pick it up. And more often than not, they're doing the swing, of course, and I'm not going to go over there and be that guy and say, hey, you should do it this way, because no one likes that. But, oh, man, like, there's a few little tweaks that can make that so much more effective.
How did you get into kettlebells?
Well, I was, and I'll try not to drag this story on too long, because I listen to podcasts a lot, and when people start telling their life story, it's like fast forward, so I won't make this my life story, but we had kids, I started working out at home, got tired of doing bench press, squats, and pull-ups, and back in the early 2000s, there was a magazine called Muscle Media 2000, and they had, like, the Body for Life Challenge and all this kind of stuff, so it was a pretty good magazine compared to a lot of the ones out there, and I started noticing these little articles appearing from this guy named Pavel Sasulin, and they were all really cool. They were all, like, hardcore, all about lifting heavy and not being a wuss and being a man. And, like, and his articles were, like, such a stark contrast to all the other articles in the magazine. I was like, that's all the only reason I kept buying the magazine. I'm like, I can't wait to see what this guy says. And then he started to come out with ads for these books that he had. So the first book I bought from him was called Power to the People. And I'd never done deadlifts before in my life. I'm ashamed to say that. I always thought the only guys that did deadlifts were like the super strong guys with knee wraps, and you know, you see them in this haze of chalk in the corner of the gym, and you know, I was like, I can't do deadlifts. I mean, I'm not like that. And his book called for two exercises: the bent press with the 45-pound, 7-foot-long Olympic bar, one arm shoulder press, and then the deadlift. And I'm like, oh. And he didn't look that like one of these guys with no necks. So,
and he was doing that with kettlebells, was he?
Well, you know, he was actually, this was all just a barbell program. Right. Now this, and then so a few months later, after I'd been doing this program, and I thought, geez, I can actually, this kettle or this deadlifting stuff is really cool. And I, for the first time in my life, I think I started doing some lower rep lifting instead of like just pure bodybuilding pump up type stuff. And then I started noticing these ads for kettlebells. So back then there was only there's no such thing as DVDs. There were VHS tapes. So I ordered this VHS tape from the States. I think it took a month to get to me, and I plopped it into my player, and this guy's doing this. He's got this immense kettlebell, and he's doing these like really cool looking exercises, and you can hear his joints cracking as he's doing it. And I thought, oh my God, I got to learn how to do this. So I had to wait patiently till the next summer, because we always go down to the States for holidays, and they didn't ship kettlebells to Canada at this point. So my first two kettlebells were a 16 kilo and a 24 kilo. And I beat myself into oblivion with these kettlebells for about a year before I went down and took the instructor's course in Minnesota with Pavel himself, and fell in love. Well, I went down there with like sore elbows, sore wrists, sore low back. And then after the first day of the program or the course, I thought, oh, well, good God, no wonder I'm sore. Like I'm doing it completely. I'm doing it relatively right. Like I was kind of like the guys in the gym I see now, but I was doing it just wrong enough to like tear the lower back muscles into shreds and to wreck my elbows. And like my shoulders were just a mess. Hey, but I still love them because it gave me such a great rush. Right. So, and then I started teaching them. I thought, you know what? These are actually safe. Like I'm going to start, you know, I'm going to see if other people like this kind of thing. So I started doing some teaching just with people that I would treat. I'd say, you know, you want to check out this kettlebell thing, you know, and it started from there. And I knew that I was onto something. That I think the second year I started telling people about it, I had a whole bunch of kettlebells made at a foundry near my house. And I had 50 people in the field of a playground at one time learning how to do these kettlebells. And I don't live in a very big city, but I thought, okay, there's definitely something. And this was before CrossFit and all these other types of TRX and all these things. It was just, so I kind of went from there, and then I started teaching classes. And then people started saying, well, I can't come to your class all the time. You should do a video. And I was like, I'm not doing a video. Like, God, can you imagine how embarrassing that would be? Like to be, like people will hate it. People will think I'm a loser. Like all these things go through your head when you're thinking of doing a video. And then eventually I thought, ah, what the heck? I'm going to try it out, see what happens. And it ended up being kind of, I would say the first video is my greatest hits of all the, I sort of distilled all the classes I did for 5 years into like all my kind of favorite routines onto this one video. And it just happened to be an hour, and my classes are all an hour. And I didn't even time it. My wife filmed it on a beach in Mexico, and it just ended up being 58 minutes, like crazy.
So I was going to ask where you filmed that, because it doesn't look like Canada.
No, it was, Playa del Carmen in Mexico. And the funny thing was, have you been to Mexico? I mean, I'm sure you've been to much nicer beaches.
I've not, no.
It's pretty crowded, so I had to walk about 2 miles with this kettlebell in this backpack. And I remember just being in a miserable mood, and I left it, of course, to the last minute. I think that 2 days before we had to go home, I'm like, okay, I think I finally have the masterpiece, you know, like it's here, it is, let's do this. And we walked all the way to the end of this beach where there weren't as many people, and filmed it. I buried the kettlebell because I had this sneaking suspicion that something wasn't right, and got back to the room, looked at it, couldn't hear a thing. The wind noise was so severe, and I was doing it way too quickly. And I thought, okay, no one's going to be able to keep up, and no one's going to hear what I'm saying. So we went back the next day, and my hands are calluses are ripped off, and I've got like swollen wrists, and I'm just, because we did a couple takes, and so I did it all in one take. We had like breaks in between each chapter, But it slowed me down, and I had my wife hide behind this huge boulder, and it kind of cut down the window. It's so low tech. It's brutal. It's a really low tech video, but I hope it captures the essence of kettlebells, because it is like kind of like a raw form of exercise, and it's not fancy, and it's just,
you don't need music. You don't need a multi-camera shoot. You literally just needed you doing the exercises with the explanation, and that is enough. It clearly is enough.
Well, and I think, like, whenever I do my own video, because I use it as a benchmark workout. If I can do my whole video with a 20-kilogram weight without hitting pause once, I'm in pretty good shape. And that's – it takes some work to get there. Like, I have to hit pause a couple times too, typically. And if I can work myself up to where I can throw that thing in, I know I'm in good shape. Like, I'm in good enough shape that I could do a triathlon and kick butt. I could do a CrossFit workout and fit right in. And, you know, go for a run, swim across a lake. Like, it's just, it prepares you for everything. It's incredible.
Yeah, I'm not at the stage where I can do that yet. I'm at the stage where I have to pause it a couple of times. And then when I'm done, I have to, like, text some people for moral support. And I need a cuddle and a nap.
There's been times when I've let myself go a little bit. And I'm laying on the gym floor. And my kids come in and they're like, they see my video playing. They're like, you can't even do your own video, Dad. Why are you such a wimp now? And I'm like, oh, no kidding. So it keeps me in check, because I don't want the young me to beat the old me. So it's.
I suppose it is a good personal marker for yourself, isn't it? You know what level you was at to finish the video. So you've always got that as a bookmark and a benchmark.
Yeah, like, and I know the day is going to come where I won't be able to do it. But as long as I can, I'm going to try, right? And so it's nice to have. I don't do it all the time, because I think if you do anything too much, that's why I made the other two videos. I thought, my God, people are going to get bored of this thing. We need to have some variety here. But I love what you said about your knees and your compartment syndrome, and I think that might be my favorite thing about kettlebells is you could be pretty messed up and still have a wicked VO2 max, because you don't need to run.
VO2 is not what it was. I do a little bit of MMA training. I do jits at the moment as well, and I know I gas out pretty quick. Well, I'm just under 250 pound at the moment as well. And when I had one MMA fight, and when I had that MMA fight, I was 170. So I'm nearly 80 pound on top of that. So it's a lot for my engine to take. So cardio wise, I'm nowhere near what I used to be. There's a lot of body fat in that, but I think there's also a lot of mass in that as well. That isn't body fat, because I've been doing a lot of powerlifting since. So I think I'm a whole lot stronger. But in terms of gas tank, I haven't got one. I used to be able to do 7-minute rounds. I won't even get to the end of a 3-minute round at the moment.
Now, how long ago did you play professional rugby?
Oh, man.
Or I mean soccer.
No, it was rugby.
It was rugby.
From 16 to 21, it was 11 years ago I finished.
Yeah, wow.
And I was in pretty good shape then. Yeah, and I left the army 2009, so 7 years ago.
So you know what it's like to be in good shape.
Yeah, I was in great shape during them times. And I had compartment syndrome then, and I didn't know it. I thought it was shin splints. I was constantly getting an ache in my calves and in my shins. But it was manageable, because I was probably about 185, somewhere around there. But I think since I put a lot more weight on, I'm carrying all that mass, the threshold, whereas I might be able to run for an hour, maybe an hour 20, and I would be in pain, but I would be able to push through it, whereas now it comes on after 5 or 6 minutes, and I just can't handle it. And I think that's because of the extra weight that I'm carrying, which is a vicious circle at the end you find yourself in then. I can't go running. I used to run 2 miles every day when I was in the army, and that was before starting work, if you like, for the army. Me and my friend would get up at 6 o'clock, we'd go for a run, get a shower, and then go and start army work, which might involve running or something along those lines. I used to enjoy running. Now, you know, I can't even run commentary at the moment.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't like it no more at all. I've tried doing bike riding, but I don't like it. Rowing's about the only one I can stomach, but I've still got in my head that I can go, you know, and do like a 140, 500 meter split, which completely fucking ruins you for more than a couple of laps.
I haven't gotten into rowing. I have a nice rowing machine at our clinic that I might need to talk to you about this, because everyone I've talked to said that it is one ass-kicking workout.
It'll kick your ass in a minute. Well, if you do, is it a concept two rower?
Yes.
On a concept two, when you start rowing, one of the options that you've got, it'll give you a split for 500 meters. Most people, just at an easy pace, will row around about 150, 2 minute as a split for the 500 meters. If you put it on number 10, so that's actually quite hard to pull it as well.
Yep.
If you go for 500 meters or go for a kilometer and try and get it down to about 130, 132, you're going to be in absolute shit state by the time that you get to the end. And I've seen people like collapse and stuff by doing like a 130 split on them. And I can't even, it's just a pure sprint, isn't it? It's like sprinting 100 meter level style sprinting, but doing it for, you know, 400, 500, 600 meters. That's the speed you're going.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think, you know, if you look at 100 meter runners, they're out of breath, aren't they, by the time they get to the end of the line? It's only 10 seconds. So
yeah.
It's like that. It's like a 400 or 600 meter sprint, but it's balls out and it's awesome. And obviously there's no impact wear that you get on your knees or anything like that. But yeah, it's tough. It's really tough.
And you do repeats of this then, or is it sort of a one time thing and you're done?
I haven't done it for a while. We used to do 5 rounds of it with a minute off in between. One of the rugby teams that I played for used to have you punching a punch bag. Doing press-ups and then the concept two rower, and you would like go draw like a bit of a circuit and you would go stations of that, and it was horrific.
Huh.
One of the hardest things.
I bet. Yeah, you're just full of lactic acid and just, oh my God.
Yeah, you get it in your biceps from the constant pulling, you get it in your quads from the pushing, your heart's beating out of your chest, you're sucking oxygen. In fact, the army used to do this this competition, which was really cool. They would put it in the sports hall of the gym, and they would link up about 8 or 9, maybe 10 of the Concept 2 rowers up to a laptop, and then use a projector onto the screen, and they would have races. So they might do like a 1,000 meter sprint, they might do a 5K or a 10K, and then they would have all different units and regiments would come. And we even did a relay one as well, where you'd have to jump on and off. And it was wicked. And on the screen ahead of you, like a massive big projector screen, they would show where your rowing boat was in relation to all the rest of them. So you've got a visual representation of how far ahead or behind you are. Well, yeah, that was good. That was my regiment actually won it. So I'm actually technically a rowing champion. we won it once, but yeah, that was like the only time I've ever competed in it, and it wasn't in a boat, it was in a gym.
Well, that's yeah, that sense of competition, that absolutely jacks it up at a level, doesn't it? It's
yeah, amazing. Big time. The row is awesome.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry, I was just gonna say it's awesome. The row is quality, but yeah, it killed you.
Okay, well, that's inspired me to get going on this, because I've looked at it, you know, and it's we have a studio at where we do our kettlebell classes at my clinic, and yeah, I look at it and I think, geez, I should try that thing out, but you know, I get easily distracted, or I'll go back to my kettlebells, and I can run right now. But actually, speaking of that, so you've done a lot of high intensity interval training, obviously.
Yeah.
And you know, if you look at anything, like a lot of, like, that's the trend again on the internet. It's come back full circle again. Now we're back to high intensity training is the way to burn fat and change your body composition, and running it's out again. If you want to be skinny and weak, be, you know, that run. Yeah. And it's like these primal, like there's primal fitness guys and these paleo guys, they think running is just an idiotic thing. But a few years ago when the book Born to Run came out, running was really cool again. And but I think from my experience, and I don't know if you've noticed this yourself, but if you really want to drop your body weight, and you've been a professional runner, basically, would you agree that like longer distance running is the way to go? Because I find if I want to drop some weight quick, just do a few long runs during the week with some intervals in between.
I've never really been successful in dropping a massive amount of weight, except for diet always seems to be the one that has the most impact whenever I've done anything. I can drop quite a few pounds, you know, maybe 8-9 pound in a month with a decent diet. But no,
you're talking high protein, low carbs, that kind of thing.
Yeah, basically the paleo-ish diet. I actually eat fairly paleo-ish anyway. It's just that I drink quite a lot of beer, and then over weekend I'll go fucking mad with pizzas and stuff. Which is, and I'm also pretty much addicted, I think, to energy drinks, which I know is bad, but I just love the taste of them.
We'd get along well. Yeah, I'm the same. I eat pretty good during the week, and I'm very much, I like the idea. I don't like eating bread. Like, bread to me is a fun thing to eat. Chips are fun. Like, I'd rather eat chips than bread. I'd rather drink beer than eat porridge. I'd rather, you know, like, I try to pick and choose my carbohydrate poisons, and I try to, like, sort of save up for the weekend. And I love pizza. I love all that kind of crap. It's makes life worth living. And I love beer too. I mean, yeah. I'm Canadian, so I mean, I'm sure that we have that in common. So.
It literally just is that. If I could miss the weekends out, like, during the week, I can eat a decent breakfast. I could even just eat a tin of tuna for breakfast, which is fine. I'll have a salad pretty much every dinner time, and then, you know, I have a fairly sensible evening meal most of the time. But weekends, I'll go pizza, curry, and I know that it's doing me in. And it ends up being a vicious cycle. I can train pretty regular, and it have no effect on my body whatsoever. Or I can train really sporadically, but have my diet on point and the weight just fall off me. At the moment, I'm kind of a few weeks into really ramping it up in the gym. I train every single morning. That's the first thing I do every single morning, is I go and train. And I am doing the more bodybuilder type weight stuff, mostly low rep, really high weight, like in the 4 to 6 sort of rep range for weights. And then for my cardio type stuff, I'm doing MMA or I'm doing jiu-jitsu for the most part, which I really enjoy both of those. I really enjoy the learning aspect of jiu-jitsu, because mentally it's so taxing. It feels like overwhelming at times with the amount of stuff to learn. But I don't feel like I'm exercising when I'm doing it. I don't feel like I'm, you know, it doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like, for me, going for running was a bit of a chore, whereas this doesn't feel like a chore. So I feel like I'm exercising aplenty. I just need to sort my diet out and be more consistent with my diet, and I'll probably get down to a decent sort of shape again. I reckon I could get under 200, I don't think, at the moment, without real strict everything. But I reckon I could get 20, 30 pounds off, no problem.
Wow. Huh. Yeah, and it is true, like, there is certain metabolisms, right? I mean, there are certain guys that you can probably put on muscle like crazy. Yeah, you have a naturally high body mass set point, almost, you could say. Mm. So, whereas I'm, if I didn't work out all the time, I'd be the opposite. I turn into the skinny fat guy. I'd be like, it's awful. And I.
Oh, I've lost you.
I'm bike, run, repeat, and no delts to speak, just awful, just an awful, I didn't want to take my shirt off in the summer, I just, my arms shrunk up, it's a terrible sight, and so I'm trying to get in between those two realms, right, where I stay, like, I look like I work out, and I feel like I work out, because I feel a lot better when I have some muscle, but still keep the cardio going, and so it's, I know a lot of guys I play hockey with that played really high level hockey. They have this genetic predisposition to be like big and strong, probably the same as you. And then there's some guys like me that are probably better suited to doing longer distance cardio type stuff. But
I definitely think there's a type. I'm definitely in that rugby player type. Like, I've got a thick arse, I've got thick quads, I've got a thick neck and a thick back. I don't know if people gravitate to the sport that they're built for, if you know what I mean. I wanted to be a marathon runner, no matter how much training I did, it's never going to work, is it? I'm not built like an East African runner. It's just not in my makeup. No, I'm more likely to be a sprinter than a long distance runner. Do you think people gravitate to that, to what they're like, or do you think some of it is molded by the sports that you do?
You know what, I agree with you. It's you gravitate towards what you're good at, because I know guys like you that have done multiple Ironmans, and they never get skinny, right? They're always like this big muscular dude, doing an Ironman in like 15 to 18 hours. Like, and I have a 20-pound weighted vest, and sometimes I've got some stairs near my house, and I'll do the stairs with that vest. And 20 pounds, so that makes me about, I don't know, maybe 185, 190 pounds. And holy man, 20 extra pounds is incredible. So, yeah, like, and if I was to go out and try to play a sport like rugby, I could probably be one of those guys that stand. My son plays rugby. I could probably be one of those guys that, you know, throws the ball away just before he gets crushed by someone like you. But I'd never be the guy in the middle of the scrum, no matter how much protein I ate or, you know, how much supplements I took. I'm sure that I would still be, like, you know, the smaller, weaker of the human species.
The ironic thing is, when I was 16 and 17 and 18 and I was in academies as a rugby player, I couldn't put weight on for toffee. I was doing squats and deadlifts till my teeth fell out. I was drinking protein shakes five times a day, and I couldn't put an ounce on. And then as soon as I left the army, I just put a fucking ton of weight on. Good and bad weight, both good and bad weight. It just fucking, I don't know if that was because obviously I wasn't doing anywhere near the amount of cardio that I was doing in the army. You basically do something every single day, usually, you know, 4 to 6 mile at least every single day. And I think that probably has a big part to play in it. But yeah. I noticed when I went back after I left the army, a couple of years after I left the army, and I was maybe 16, 17 stone, what's that in pounds? Probably about 225, 230. I was tackling people, and it felt like there was nothing there when I was tackling people compared to when I was tackling people when I was 170, 175, something like that. I was just absolutely going through people. It felt awesome. It's just that I couldn't run.
Yeah, there's that fine line, eh? It's,
Yeah, so, I'll give you 4 minutes of fury and then you're going to have to take me off.
So now, I have a theory about that, though. What does your dad look like? Is your dad a big guy?
No, my dad's short, but he was born premature. All his brothers are pretty tall and quite broad. He's quite broad, but he's only short. He played rugby as well. He's about 5'7".
Okay. Yeah. Because I have this theory that around the age of 30, you know how they say women become their mothers?
Yeah.
Which, pretty hard to argue that, like, a lot of times. I think guys become their dads, but it takes till about the age of your late 20s, early 30s, all of a sudden, boom, like, you're going to become your dad. Like, I have a friend that was thin as a rail through high school, and he worked out all the time. I remember staying over at his place when we were, like, little kids, and he would be doing, like, leg raises in bed. I'd be, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to get a six-pack. And, you know, when you're 14 years old, and he was just and then he actually lives in London, England now, and I hadn't seen him in about, I don't know, 8 years, and he came back for a visit, and I had to do a double take, because I'm like, whoa, like, his dad is like this big, burly guy, and he had become his dad. It was incredible. He morphed into this, like, big giant. So, although his diet is would make our diets look really clean, but I see that with a lot of guys, like, they're, and I treat a lot of, like, young athletes, and they're like, I want to put on weight, how do I put on weight? I'm like, don't worry, you will.
Yeah, Christ, like, don't worry, you definitely will. Yeah, I mean, there was nothing on me at 16 17 at all.
Yeah.
We did a body fat measure once with the Great Britain rugby team. I was the second lowest in the team, and wow. I can't even imagine what that'd be like now. And the guy below me, the only one that was below me, was a guy that worked in a gym. And he had like 4% body fat, and he was like, you need to put a bit more body fat on, mate, because it's not going to be good for you. he was unbelievably shredded, like, permanently. Oh, yeah. And, you know, probably taking some Mexican supplements, I think, as well.
Oh, yeah.
So how does physiotherapy line up with kettlebells? Because I've heard you mention a couple of times as we've been talking about how safe kettlebells are.
Yeah.
But in my head, when I first think of kettlebells, and I'm sure people who don't know what they are, when they're thinking about kettlebells, they think of the CrossFit style of doing kettlebells, which seems like it's unsafe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like, I think a lot of people think about the CrossFit, the what do they call it, the American style swing? Where you swing it right over your head.
Oh, right, yeah, the full swing. I'd call it a full swing.
a full swing. Okay. Yeah, there's like supposedly the Russian swing where you swing it up to your chest and you yank it back down like you're hiking a football back to the quarterback and repeat until you fall over. And then the American style swing where there's that pause or the full swing where you pause at the top and then you come back down. And I've done both. And, you know, I actually have a different opinion of the American style swing now that I think if you're healthy and you're a good athlete and you have good coordination, it's a good way to do the swing in the sense that you have to have a lot more explosiveness coming out of the hole. Yeah. Compared to the Russian style swing, which is a lot more flowing and a lot more, you're using your hamstrings almost to stretch your hamstrings and then blast that kettlebell up. Whereas with the full swing, you really have to, it's almost like doing a vertical jump out of the hole to get that thing launched over your head. But as a safety wise, yeah, I don't think it's the safest way to do it. But from a physio perspective, I do like the kettlebells for what, like for someone like you, right? You want to be fit. You have compartment syndrome, which I want to talk to you about after. You know, you can't run and your knees are shot. And I'm sure this is fixable stuff. If I could get a hold of you, I might have to fly over there and see you. But it's great. Like I know when I did the third video, I had a really busted up knee from surfing. I got crushed by a wave and I actually strained my ACL really bad, but you know, I could still do kettlebells. I could still film the video. And yeah, my first video, I think I sprained my ankle playing tennis really bad, but I could still do kettlebells, right? Cause there's, I'm not jumping around or doing any, like from a purely, getting your heart rate up in a hurry standpoint, kettlebells are just a great way to go if you have some musculoskeletal issues. And then the other thing I like about it is you can, in order to do a lot of the exercises, you have to have pretty good mobility. Like to do an overhead squat, you have to have a pretty healthy shoulder. To do a windmill, you have to have a healthy shoulder. To do a Turkish get-up, you have to have a healthy shoulder. And a lot of people, we were talking about what type of exercise you gravitate towards. A lot of people don't gravitate towards, you know, like say a complete bodybuilding type program because they don't like to press overhead because their shoulders are so stiff from sitting at a desk. So you'll see a lot of guys in the gym that don't do a ton of work on their shoulders, do lots of, you know, chest and arms and that kind of thing. And
chest and biceps is every single day in all the gyms I go to.
I admit, like, if I don't feel like working out, I'll just go do chest and arms. Because it's, you know, I can look in the mirror and think, wow,
yeah,
look
it's,
at me.
It's the sexy muscles, isn't it? No, everyone will go to bicep curls 100 times out of 100 before they do a Turkish get-up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I don't know what it is about the Turkish get-up, because it is an easy exercise to heat, but I think it's kind of the same as burpees, in the sense that you're getting up from the floor and you're standing up and getting back down. There must be something about the blood sloshing around in your body and your heart having to work hard. And there must be some primitive part of our brain that says, oh my God, like this is really hard, even though you're just getting up and down from the floor.
Getting up off the floor in rugby when you've been tackled, in MMA when you've been taken down, in jits when you've been taken down, in burpees, in Turkish get-ups. Getting up off the floor is the hardest thing to do. And I don't know why it is.
Yeah, there's actually a few studies now that indicate that a good predictor for, I don't know if it's lifespan or your how functional you're going to be in old age, is how well you can get up off the floor. Like, if you can get up off the floor and put using your hands, it's a good sign.
What about if you have to make a noise when you get up? Because I have to make a noise.
You know what? That reminds me of the first time I went down to take my kettlebell instructor's course. On Pavel's videos, he uses a lot of the power breathing. So there's a lot of, when he's lifting heavy, he'll do like, and same thing with how when guys box, when they punch, they'll do the tss, you know, that type of breathing. And so when I got to the course, I noticed that a lot of his disciples, they would pick up a 10-pound kettlebell and they'd do the tss, you know, and it's just like, come on, guys. And thank God, Pavel's a cool enough guy. He said, guys, you only need to use that kind of breathing if you're, like, lifting a maximum weight, okay? You don't have to, like, you know, I'm all about safety, but, you know, come on. So the hissing went down after a little while, so that was nice. But, yeah, no, sorry, I got off topic there. But from my standpoint as a physiotherapist, I have to there's a caveat attached to that. Most physiotherapists, and I don't want to throw my profession under the bus, but a lot of physios will – there's an old-fashioned way of doing physiotherapy, and then there's a new way of doing physiotherapy, relatively new. Now, the old-fashioned way was actually born in England after the Second World War, and they needed people to mobilize the soft tissue in these war vets that, like, you know, maybe had a limb blown off or had these terrible injuries, and they had to get these guys functioning again. So physio started out as a branch of the nursing profession, and there's actually a British doctor named James Siriax that invented all these techniques of basically beating the shit out of people to get them moving again. Like, it was all soft tissue work. It was kind of like primitive massage, but worse, right? And it worked so well that physiotherapy actually became its own profession. It spread throughout the world. And now everyone's using machines. Everyone's using ultrasound, laser, radio shockwave therapy, all these different things. And the I guess you could say the art or the actual work of getting in there and breaking down scar tissue in people is being lost. So the clinic that I have, that's kind of our specialty. Like, it's all hands-on, and we do some acupuncture and other fancy stuff like that. But I think the most important thing that we do is break down the scar tissue with your hands. And it's not massage in the sense that you're using oil and you're rubbing. You're actually getting in there, and you can actually feel.
This is trigger pointing, it's called, isn't it?
I guess you could call it trigger point, because, and the neat thing with trigger points is usually where the muscle, the adhesion on a muscle occurs is on the trigger point, which is also called the motor end point, which is where all the nerves insert on the muscle. So it's kind of like where the nerves all connect, and they zap that muscle and cause it to contract. So that happens to be where the muscle is contracting the most. So of course that's where the calcification is going to get laid down when you have repetitive motion in the muscle. And it usually happens in the most annoying muscles. No one ever comes in and says, "My God, I got a knot in my bicep. I can't stand it." It's always knots in, like, in your legs, in your tibialis anterior, where you get the shin splints, in the back of the knee, in the neck, and all these little short.
It's so painful as well to have it trigger pointed properly. I had it on my, at the top of my gastrocnemius, where it meets the full calf, where it meets the soleus, where the soleus and the gastrocnemius meet each other. Yeah. That was horrific, and physio's getting thumbs and all sorts in there with it. I was biting the head of the table with it.
Oh, it's awful. Now, the technique I use is we do a lot of frictions. So what that allows you to do is use a little bit less pressure. And so instead of going with the muscle and, like, really pressing down hard on that trigger point in order to overwhelm the nervous system and hopefully get that muscle to relax a little bit, you're actually getting in there, and you can feel it, the patient can feel it, you can feel these calcifications, like, breaking down, and when it totally breaks down, you get this complete rush of just like, oh my God, that feels better.
And then, like, when someone cracks your back.
What's that?
Like when somebody cracks your back for you.
Almost the same kind of feeling, yeah, except you pay the price because you have to bite the pillow until that finally lets go of it. You can really regulate the amount of pain the person's going through by your pressure. So you want to apply just enough pressure so that the person can tolerate it, but not so much that they can't not tense up. So it's a really neat way to do it. It's like dental hygiene for your body, right? Like, if you go into the dentist and you've got a big chunk of tartar on your tooth, you can brush and floss all you want, but until someone gets in there with their little metal hook and scrapes that off for you, it sits there for years and years. So that's why I wonder about your calves. Hey, I wonder if there's not in your knees. I wonder if there's not a lot of calcifications around your kneecaps and around your deep in your calves and stuff like that. So
my knees probably, but I was misdiagnosed for ages on my calves, and I'm pretty sure it's compartment syndrome. Looking at the symptoms that I've got and what I've managed to read up on it, and I've had some inserts from my trainers and stuff, it just doesn't seem to be helping. And obviously I've got a massive reluctance to even try running, because I'll get 500-600 meters in and I'll be in agony. My foot completely locks in the flex position and I can't bend it, so it's almost like running with casts on my ankles. The calf completely swells up because it's like getting an erection almost, but in your calf, isn't it? Because the blood fills up and can't leave. In the lower calf and in the upper calf, and it's so painful to touch. And it goes down once your heart rate relaxes a little bit, and once you've stopped exercising, it goes down. But it's probably like a 7 or an 8 in terms of like out of 10 in pain.
Yeah.
Until it goes down, it's horrific, honestly.
Yeah, it sounds like. Now, has anyone suggested like doing a release on that?
I've been to a physio over in England that didn't seem interested in the slightest. It was an NHS one, which is a free one over here. And she told me to stretch. And I'm like, I've been stretching it for years.
Yeah, that won't really help. Yeah. Jeez. Well, and I think surgery would be a little bit drastic too, heck.
The surgery that you get for this as well, I think they cut you open from knee to ankle on both sides, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks pretty sore.
I've seen people had it done.
And don't they perforate, because the muscle's in a sac, isn't it? I believe they perforate a sac so the blood can flow out of it, and that essentially lets you be able to exercise with it. I'd be up for doing it, because it's not like I'm not going to miss running for 6 weeks or something while I recover. I'm not doing any.
I would check into that, because if it is, and it does sound exactly like compartment syndrome, the fascia around that muscle is... you can't really do much about it, right? I mean, you've got such big, thick muscles, and you've got this tight fascia that as soon as that muscle gets pumped up with blood,
it's game over.
It's a starve, hey? It's like having a heart attack in your shins.
Yeah. I can't describe how painful it is to people. Like, I've gone running with my wife. I've gone running with my son occasionally, not recently, but maybe in the last 8, 9, 10 months or something like that. I've gone and I've tried and I've gone, right, let's just have a go. Let's see how far I can get. And what I end up having to do is I end up having to do Tabatas almost. If I go and do like a 2 mile run, I have to let them just carry on, and I'll stop and I'll go, right, I'm going to run to that lamppost and then stop. And I'll sprint from lamppost to lamppost to eventually get me home. Otherwise, I won't be able to get home. I'd have to walk. Because for some reason, sprinting isn't as bad as like steady state running for it, which I can't understand, but it's not as painful for some reason.
Well, I think the pumping action of sprinting probably squishes that blood back out, back up to your heart before it can accumulate. Whereas running, it's a lower intensity. The gravity is forcing that blood deeper and deeper into those muscle tissues. And then by the time it gets stuck in there, it takes a while to drain out. So
yeah, I suppose that's a good point, actually, yeah.
I think that would be my theory. So that's too bad. But yeah, I would definitely look into getting that surgery because, heck, you might be able to run again.
I'd do it, actually. It does look painful, and you get a gnarly scar from it on both sides of both legs, obviously. Looks like it's a wheelchair job for at least a couple of weeks, I think. But I work from home for the most part. I could probably handle it if I had to. It's not like it'd massively affect me, I don't think. I don't think the doctors over here are reluctant for me to just go in and for me to tell them what I've got. They'd be like, no, it's something else. Let's look into 75 other things that don't involve surgery first. So I don't know what I'd do. I don't know if I have to go private for that. I might have to.
Yeah, I know I've talked to a few people that live... You know what? It's the same here, though, too. If you go to a state-funded physio place, you get what you pay for, unfortunately.
And when it's free, you're getting fuck all.
That is true. Yeah.
So talk to me about your plans for your YouTube channel. I'm no expert, but I do work in the world of YouTube. We might be able to help you out here.
Well, the idea behind my channel is really to hopefully provide people with some easy to follow instructions so that if they decide to do kettlebells, whether they get my video or not, they can do it properly without hurting themselves. And I try to make the videos so I had them edited by these kids that are just brilliant. And because I didn't want to have a lot of ums and ahs and a lot of like dead space, because I've watched some YouTube videos where I'm like, oh my God, really? So I try to make them so they're fast paced. There's a lot of information packed into a very short span of time. And I did them on a beach in Hawaii when we were there on holidays.
You're picking some top locations, aren't you?
I'm really lucky. my in-laws have a place in Hawaii, and so I just have to pay for the plane ticket. Sometimes I can't believe how lucky I am. And so the videos aren't, it's not like it's in my gym, which would be horrible, right? So so it's nice to look at, and I had the sound cleaned up, so it's pretty easy to follow. And I've sort of, all the tips and tricks that I've sort of learned, because I teach a lot of people how to do kettlebells that probably shouldn't be doing kettlebells, but they somehow make it through. Like, there's a lot of people that come to my class that are in their 50s and 60s that haven't exercised for years, and they managed to catch on. So I think I have, like, some little tips and tricks that I've learned over the years that seem to work for most people. So if people are stuck, say, doing the windmill or whatever, there might be a trick in there that you'll find that will make a big difference with sometimes it's just a little tiny tweak to your form. So my intentions are noble with my YouTube channel. I'm really trying to just help people do kettlebells. And hopefully maybe people like it so much they'll say, well, I'm going to try this guy's video out. And so, of course, I put links to how to get my video there as well. So my main goal with the videos were to break even, which I think I've done by now. So it's more of a really fun thing for me. And, I just want people to do well and have a workout that they can just plug in and turn their brain off and, you know, kick their own butt, right?
There's some unbelievable fitness accounts on YouTube. The likes of, like, Elliot Hulse and other guys that do some awesome Q&A stuff. If you was putting stuff on that was, like, I don't know, if you broke down every single move, I'm pretty sure that would be easy to do in a day or two. And the good thing about YouTube is it's the second biggest search engine in the world. So as long as the titles, you know, here's how you do a Turkish get-up or how to do a windmill, how to do, you know, a kettlebell swing, that sort of stuff would go down awesome on YouTube and would probably end up with hundreds of thousands of hits, if not millions, because of the genre that it's in, because people are literally searching that sort of stuff. Obviously you need to grow a subscriber base before it's going to be showing your channel ahead of all the rest of them, but I'm pretty sure with people that you've worked with, and especially with the likes of Joe, if you went on there and said, hey, guess what, I've got a YouTube channel, come and subscribe to me, it'd probably get fucking swamped. I might be able to help you out with about 50 hits maybe, but I think Joe would probably send tens of thousands your way. but I think fitness on YouTube, I think there's a lot of scope for experts like yourself to really make a big impact in there because of the nature of YouTube. And you obviously know what you're talking about. The videos that you make are really easy to follow. And it's not like you're going to get one person to watch it once. I go back and watch your videos, even though it's not on your channel, although I will be going to your channel from now on. People go back and watch them again and again. I might watch it 3 times a week while I work out alongside it.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah, like the videos that people put on YouTube, like initially it was like a compliment. Oh, you like my video enough to put it on YouTube for me? Wow, thanks. And I still kind of look at it that way. But I do want to get a hold of these guys and say, hey, you know, like, thanks for doing this. Do you mind just directing people towards my channel? So at least if they're going to do this video off YouTube, they can learn how to do it properly.
Yeah.
And I think as long as, you know, we're all just trying to help other people, I think it'll all work out really well in the end.
I think so. I think you've got, like you said, you've done classes for ages. And I agree that that is definitely something that's more aimed at women or more suitable for women. I'm just trying to think of, like, in my own experience, like, would any of my friends go to a group class? And I don't know if any of my male friends would. I can definitely see females that I know doing that. And yeah. I think that that's something that they really enjoy doing with all their friends. But I think lads will work out either on their own or with one gym mate that they go to the gym with. So I think doing classes like this online, and especially, I mean, I've had my kettlebell about 6 years. It's got one chip on the corner of it where it hit a bit of concrete. But apart from that, it's never gonna not work, is it? It's the most durable bit of fitness equipment you could ever have. The handle's nice and fat. The bell itself is, you know, it's happy days. It's cast iron. It's No, it's indestructible, isn't it? It's a bit of kit that's literally going to last longer than I am, by a long way.
Yeah, and you know, I do take my kettlebell with me. I've had some epic workouts in hotel rooms. I mean, it's crazy. You know, that right in between the two beds, there's only enough room basically to stand. And I've had some great training sessions in like really small spaces. So, yeah, I usually pack it in the back of the vehicle whenever we go somewhere. So,
you've worked with some MMA fighters as well, haven't you?
I've done a little bit of work with Jason McDonald. Lives in my city, and he was middleweight. He did really well for himself. This would have been a few years ago.
I want to think it was about 2010, 2012, maybe. It was
active. Yeah, around there. Jason the Athlete McDonald. And now he is like an absolute CrossFit god. He does a lot of teaching, and he has a CrossFit gym here in town. But that was an appropriate name for him because he is one heck of an athlete. And he didn't come from a fighting background. He actually came from, I think he was like a really high-level volleyball player. And he just is just such a really good athlete that I think that enabled him to do quite well at that time. Because he didn't have like that sort of base tech. He didn't grow up fighting. So that would have helped.
I've just pulled up his record. He's got some unbelievable names. He's mostly lost to him, to be fair to him, but he's got Rich Franklin, Yushin Akami, Damian Maya, Tom Lawler's on there, Travis Luter, Nate Quarry, some Alan Belcher, some absolutely monster names. Yeah, so you was working with him, on his literally just doing kettlebells with him? Or was he another sort of his strength and conditioning?
We did a few sessions just to give him a bit of a taste of kettlebell training and, give him an alternative way to get his cardio up for the... I think this would have been back in maybe 2010, like when he was this... He kind of had made a breakthrough. So, and I've known him for before that. Like, we don't hang out all the time, but, like, I would say he's my buddy. So, to be honest, he doesn't like kettlebells. Like, he told me that. He said, you know, I hate kettlebells now, Keith. I'm not going to do them ever again. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. Like, I don't know what it is about kettlebells, but he didn't love them. And I remember I took him through one workout, and he's a much better athlete than me, but I'm just better at kettlebells because I've been doing them for so long. And I kind of pushed him, and through this training session, at the end, he goes, okay, well, you kicked my asses. Now it's my turn to kick your ass. So we did a little bit of jiu-jitsu, and it was like one of those cartoons where the cat is playing with the mouse and laying on its back and flipping the little mouse up in the air. I was at his mercy. And he's got these hands that are like an NBA basketball player's hands. And he grew up on the east coast of Canada and from a fisherman's family. So he pulled in nets all his life when he was a kid.
Oh, so he's got four arms like a gorilla.
Yeah, his grip strength is insane. And if you watch a lot of his fights, he used that to his advantage. Like, he would actually use...
Oh, just lost you.
There's a lot of people don't have big enough hands to accomplish that. So I used to love watching him fight because I thought, he's using his grip strength again. He's using his hand strength to really do things that a lot of other people can't do with the jiu-jitsu. So... he'll just for fun, he'll grab your leg and he'll just drop on the floor. It's just like a taser, just like he'll grab your quad and you just boom, right down. So, he's a great guy. But he did some kettlebell training with me, but it wasn't his favorite mode of exercise. So
I can see that. Can you see kettlebells being useful for people as they get old? Because I've been thinking, you don't see people who are old now, and I'm talking like 70 plus, you don't see them of having grown up doing weights, really. People growing up doing weights kind of since the 80s, really, I think, haven't they? I think that's when people started hitting gyms and stuff. I would like to think I'm going to do jiu-jitsu till I'm in my 70s, if I last that long. You don't see many people my size in the 70s, so there's a good chance that I don't reach my 70s. But I would like to think that doing jiu-jitsu is a way to stay young. Do you think doing kettlebells... I think you'd have to drop down weight. I don't see myself doing a 20 kg over my head at overhead squats when I'm 70. But do you think kettlebells is a way to stay young? Do you think doing weights is a way to stave off aging.
Yeah, I think it's the ultimate way. I mean, if you look at like people that actually legitimately on a consistent basis lift weights, they look awesome. Like they look, their bodies look so much better than someone the same age, let's say 70, that has been a marathon runner all their life.
Yeah.
You know, like they look, and there's certainly your hormonal profiles optimized when you lift weights, and your muscle mass. Like your muscle mass is so important for your metabolism and your hormones, your immune system, all these things. So I think weightlifting is the ultimate. I think it should be the cornerstone of an anti-aging program. And then, you know, the other things go along with it. But it should be the foundational exercise for that. So
I look at old people, and a lot of old people, especially when they hit 70s and 80s, they've got that stoop going on, haven't they, where the head's looking at the ground as the permanent position, they're shuffling their feet, and you think, is there any way to, if they would have done weights, do you think that would be different?
I do. It's depending. Like, if they just did chest and arms, maybe not. But if they actually had, like, a sensible program that involved overhead pressing, and that's the great thing with the kettlebells, right? You can do, for people that don't want to go to the gym and have a formalized gym program, to practice things like, you can't do a Turkish get-up without good shoulder mobility, and you can't, and thoracic mobility, and the ability to have
flexibility in your hips and everything to be able to kick your feet back.
Yeah, I think kettlebells are the most practical way to stay young in terms of using weights for that purpose. I guess the one thing to watch for is, you know, the technique, right? So, but you know, the thing with it, the other thing I love about kettlebells is, you're using a relatively light weight, so you can have a little bit of wiggle room with your technique, and you're not going to kill yourself. It's not like you Olympic lift, so you know technique is everything there. I mean, in terms of staying safe,
yeah.
And because you're lifting some really substantial weights really fast, kettlebells, like, you know, like there's a lot of these women, they use a 10 kilogram weight, which isn't bad, but that's not a ton of weight.
I am scared of dropping it on my toes when my hands get sweaty, though.
That is definitely, I've never seen it happen, though. I'm going to put on that one. I've never seen that happen.
I always also envisage it, and it actually has slipped out of my hand when I've been doing one-handed swings, because I get a bit giddy sometimes and do one-handed swings, and it slipped out of my hands on the changeover, during your changeover from one to the other midair, and I've misgrasped it, and I've smashed the floor, because obviously 20 kilogram hitting the floor from, I don't know, chest height. Does make a fucking dent, like, but I have slipped and not been able to grab it properly with sweaty hands by doing the changeovers mid-air. But I suppose, yeah, that's, you don't need to be doing mid-air changeovers, do you? You could probably put it down and start again.
But you did the right thing, right? They taught us that in kettlebells. They said, if you lose control of the kettlebell at that point, just let it go.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to try and stop it with my foot. Jesus.
Or try to reach out and grab it. Yeah, that's
no, it was gone. It was gone. It smashed the shit out of the floor, though.
Yeah, that momentum. And that just goes to show you how much momentum is going on your body every time you do a swing, right? If it does that to the floor, you can imagine the force that you're putting on your the rest of your body. I think Pavel used a lot of force plate studies when he was, you know, kettlebells are becoming more popular, and it's insane how much force goes through your feet at the bottom of a swing. Like, it's,
well, I filmed myself, not, I didn't film myself entirely, I just filmed my feet, because I'm trying to get interesting shots for my vlog. Like, the day before, I put the camera in the fridge and spoke to the camera while it was in the fridge. So yesterday I just did it from basically like the top of where your sock would come to, and just did a couple of cleans. And I was noticing, once I played the video back, the amount my feet are moving around, compensating for the shift in the weight as the weight's going up and down, I never even realised. Obviously, I'm not looking at my feet as I'm doing it. And it's really quite mad, because my feet are the only thing in shot for a couple of seconds. So you focus on them going like, oh my God, what are you doing? Like, but yeah, it's definitely... It's awesome for core strength. I think it's awesome for jiu-jitsu in terms of your grip strength, and in terms of you being able to sit up and force somebody off you when they're on you as well. I think I do love them. I think it's something I would like to do for a long time if my joints hold up.
Yeah. Well, and I think they should. And I think they are, the weight is scalable. That is the nice thing about it. So, you know, I'm probably in another 10 years, I'll probably have to scale down to the 16 kilo to do my video. And who knows, right? I mean, I know some old time power lifters that are still lifting tremendous amounts of weight. And so, but yeah, the time will come where we'll have to downgrade the load a little bit. But geez, you know, compared to what you'd be like if you didn't do this kind of thing, I just, you're so far ahead of the game if you're doing something like kettlebells on a regular basis. It's just,
I got my wife a 10 kg one.
Perfect.
And when I've not had mine around, it's at her parents' house. So if we've stayed at her parents' house and I've gone, oh, I'll just do a workout with this, it feels like I'm doing a workout with nothing. The 10 kg versus my 20 kg one's absolutely pathetic. And I even got my son a 4 kg yeah. one. He's 9 years old, although I don't know where that is at the moment. But he was doing some stuff with that. He was doing clean and presses with it. And I think that was pretty good for him to be in. 4 kg is nothing. It's not putting too much stress on him, I don't think. But
nope.
I would love him to get into them as he starts getting to high school and stuff. I think athletically it's going to make him a lot more powerful for all of his sports and stuff if he was doing something like that. Especially, I don't want him doing ego weights, you know, aesthetic weights. There's no point to that. I'd rather, if you're going to do weights, do squats, deadlifts, and throw a kettlebell around. And I think you're probably halfway there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I think I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of people, I get questions on, you know, what's the perfect program or how often should I do kettlebells? And I always say, you know, I love kettlebells, but if you look at me on the second video, that's me doing kettlebells only. And I think there's a place for compound lifting and like that 4 to 6 repetition lifting in conjunction with doing the higher reps of kettlebells. So I think they mold in well. And I think if you just do kettlebells, you're leaving a few, like that brute strength, you're leaving a gap there in your training. So
I like the rush that I get from doing things like deadlifts and squats. When I re-rack it and the bar shakes and like the whole gym floor shakes and stuff, I get a proper ego boost off doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
And obviously, the 20 kg kettlebell, when I put it down, makes a bit of a thud, but nothing like when 240 or 250 hits the mat. Like.
Yeah, no, I can imagine some of the weights you're lifting, the bars bent over your back, and you're making quite a racket in the gym there. So
one of the, I was taking M1T, which got banned not long after I was taking it, which is some sort of pro hormone. I don't think it's steroids. And it's not really a normal supplement you can get. It's a bit of a grey area, or it was at the time. So it wasn't illegal for me to take it, but it was certainly not really like recommended when I was in Afghanistan. And I remember there was a big American gym in Afghanistan, and I was doing bench press. And it seemed like every time I went to the gym, I wasn't doing bench press, I was doing flies. Every time I went to the gym, I could just do more weight, like significant numbers, more weight. And it was weird. It was almost like, yeah, just rack it up. Let's see how far we can go. And it was like, you could do it. Whereas last week, you could maybe go up to a certain level. You'd do an extra 15%. And it was almost like, it didn't make sense. And I remember sitting there, I'm weighing like 12 stone. What's that? Is that 170? That might be 170. Yeah, I think that's 170. So I'm weighing about 170. And I've got a 95-pound dumbbell in each hand. And I'm thinking, this is fucking ridiculous. And as I was sat there with it, it was the big sort of thin, solid ones, the solid block of dumbbell.
Oh, yeah.
And it came above my shoulder as I was resting it on my knees. And I was like,
ooh,
I shouldn't be able to do this. And I remember there was people walking past me in the gym like, the fuck is he doing with them? And I got about six reps out of it. And I was like, yep. And after I threw them, like, it was a wooden floor. So, like, the whole gym shook after I'd done them. And I was like, all right, I'm going to stop taking this stuff because this is some dodgy shit.
No, there's no doubt. That must have been legit stuff.
Yeah, definitely some powerful shit that was. It was good, though. I tried to find it not long ago and it's gone. They don't sell it no more.
Oh, dang it.
Because I'd take the shit out of it right now if I could, because it was absolutely magic and there's no one piss testing me at the moment.
Well, that's the thing, yeah.
Right, I think we will leave it there. This has been an awesome chat. Hopefully the viewers have enjoyed it. If you want to know more about what Keith does, I'm just pulling up your Twitter here. I think it's Weber Physio, isn't it?
Weber Physio, yeah.
Weber Physio with 1B. That's Keith Weber. Search Keith Weber on Google, search him on YouTube, search him everywhere you want to search him. Go and check his videos out. Go and give him a subscribe on YouTube. This has been an awesome chat. Thank you so much for your time. Anything that you want to plug, go ahead.
I think my extremekettlebells.com is on my Twitter account. But that's my landing page where you can get my videos. And then from there, you can go to my YouTube channel and just it says see more videos, and you can see my instructional videos. So you can try before you buy, and learn how to do kettlebells even if you don't get my videos. So.
Yeah, get on there, get on his YouTube if you like him, and then you can buy the video. I think you can buy it on it.com as well, can't you?
You can. If you want a really good deal and you're in England and you don't want to wait forever for a DVD, you can just go to onit.com, and I think it's $5 to get the first two videos on digital download.
Check that out. That's an awesome deal.
It is a great deal, and it makes me feel like, oh, man. But you know what? Like I said, I'm broken even. So, the more people that do my videos, the more hopefully fit people there will be out there. So I just think it's great. The technology allows people to just click on something and they have it right there.
Yeah, it is awesome. It's fantastic. The videos are great. Go check the videos out. Thank you to Keith for your time. Go check him out. Go subscribe. Go follow him on Twitter. Once again, thank you for joining us, mate. And thank you to you guys for listening. See you later.
See you.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.